Nothing left to do today. Let's do some radio, huh? Welcome to the Malloy program here on the Nova M Radio Network. Hope you had a great weekend. We had a wet weekend here in Atlanta. God knows we need it. We only have two sound bites for you tonight. One is a four-minute segment from a speech Barack Obama gave yesterday in Harrisburg, PA, that I think you'll find very interesting. We're going to play the whole 4 minutes rather than break it into little snippets. And then what happened also yesterday when Chuckle Nuts threw out the ceremonial first pitch at the Washington Nationals baseball team season opener. There was a sellout crowd of 41,000, and we would like you to hear how they reacted to our dear leader. That's all the sound that we'll have tonight, those two sound bites for you tonight. But we have a lot of ground to cover. This is from Newsday in Long Island, Newsday newspaper, Long Island, New York. I don't know. I find this very, very weird, this story. Why do I say that so much here lately, Kathy? But this one really is. 80-year-old guy, 80-year-old church deacon. Yeah, church deacon. He was at the Smith Haven Mall on Long Island yesterday. And was it yesterday? No, I guess it was Friday. He was in a wheelchair. How he got to the wheelchair, I'll explain in a moment. But he was arrested by the police for refusing to remove a T-shirt that the police and the mall authorities said protested the Iraq War. You see, if it protests the Iraq War, now if he would have had a T-shirt on that said, kill the sons of bitches, murder them all, it might have been okay. But this one protested the war. His name is Don Zirkel of Bethpage, New York. Is that New York? And police said he was disturbing shoppers at this mall in Lake Grove, I believe that's in Long Island, with his T-shirt, which had what the cops described as, quote, graphic anti-war images, end quote. I don't think they were graphic. And what if they were? You know, war is kind of graphic, isn't it? The T-shirt had the death tolls of American military personnel and Iraqis, the number 4,000 and the number 1 million, and the words dead and the word enough. The shirt also has three red paint splotches that resembled blood splatters. Now, that's a graphic anti-war image, and for that, this old son of a bitch is going to go to jail. Get out of here, you old bastard! What are you doing? You're on mall property with it. Well, the mall rent-a-cops came up and said, you know, we got this private property. You got to get out of here. Private property. Get out of here. He wouldn't move, and he refused to turn his shirt inside out, which is what the mall security told him to do. So mall security placed him on what is referred to as civilian arrest, you know, these rent-a-cop punk thugs, and called police. And when the police arrived, Mr. Zirkel, Don Zirkel, passively resisted attempts to bring him to a police car. You know, he wouldn't move. That's why they got a wheelchair and put him in the wheelchair. I'm laughing because I am just furious. He's a deacon at a Catholic church in Wyandanch. Is that how you pronounce it? Wyandanch or Wyandank, Long Island. And again, he's 80 years old, 80-year-old deacon. Protesting the war with a T-shirt. No signs, a T-shirt. Now, Zirkel had a slightly different story. He said he was sitting in the food court drinking coffee with his wife, Marie, who's 77, and several other people when police and mall security approached and demanded that they all remove their anti-war T-shirts. The others complied, but Zirkel said he refused, and when he wouldn't stand up to be removed and arrested, authorities brought over a wheelchair. Zirkel, who this church that he is the deacon at, is one of the poorest Catholic parishes on Long Island, where recently there was a devastating fire that destroyed the rectory, destroyed the storage areas. So, just the poorest Catholic church to begin with, and then it's on fire. But Zirkel says they forcibly picked me up and put me in the wheelchair. And then he was charged with criminal trespass and resisting arrest. He was released on bail. A spokeswoman for the mall owner, Simon Property Group, did not immediately return calls to New York Newsday seeking comment. Now, generally speaking, let's be real, the mall has the right to control what happens on its property. Okay. And in this particular instance, activists with dueling opinions had gathered to support and oppose, at the mall, support and oppose this five-year-long butchery that this sorry bastard in the White House has taken this country into. So you had pro-war, which the sound of that just, I don't know, just curdles my blood. Pro-war and anti-war. And Zirkel was the only one who got popped. Now, the people that were pro-war, nothing happened to them. But one anti-war dude who would not, 80-year-old man who would not remove his T-shirt, turn it inside out, and fall down on his knees apparently and say, no, I love the war, I love the slaughter, I love to see babies blown into red mist, I love George Bush, I love it, I love it. Had he done that, he would have been left alone. Now, as Zirkel was being wheeled to the police car, a crowd of anti-war protesters chanted, "We shall not be moved." Moments later, they were moved. Police and mall security ordered them off the property. So some of those who said they wouldn't be moved and got moved joined a larger anti-war crowd assembled by the mall's entrance off mall property. They were being shouted at by counter-protesters saying that the Iraq war is vital for security. I think anyone who thinks that should be taken to a small room and beaten with barrel staves until they plead for mercy. Now, here's the kicker. Where's the mall located? Well, it's on Long Island. What's the street the mall is on? Yeah, you're way ahead of me. Veterans Memorial Highway. Eighty-year-old chief church deacon, the poorest Catholic church in Long Island. I don't know. If I live so long, if I live that long, Kathy, I swear to God, I don't know what I will probably. I'll probably long have been out of radio by then, but I will. I don't know what I'll do. Strip naked, douse myself in red paint, because the Iraq War will still be going on then. 15 years from now, 17, 18 years from now, it'll still be going on. So I'm going to douse myself in red paint when I get into my 80s. And I'm going to find a place to protest, and I'm just going to chain myself to the nearest Walmart door or something.
Freedom isn't free, Mike. Why do you hate America? You won't fight them over there, fight them over here. Yeah. You want to fight them in the malls on Veterans Parkway? Is that what you want to do? You are painted red already, you know.
John McCain talked about our burgeoning mortgage mess last week, the financial meltdown. And if you listen to any of it, I did not, but I'm relying on, again, New York Daily News. Oh, this is New York Daily News. McCain insisted it was time for a little straight talk about the mortgage mess. And he insisted he had a plan, he says, to solve all this. He said, "I will not play election year politics with the housing crisis." And then he unveiled his wondrous plan, which helps the mortgage industry. Doesn't help people who are going right down the tubes. It helps the mortgage industry. But he said, you know, "I'm not going to play politics." What McCain didn't say is that two of his top advisors were lobbyists for a notorious lender in this entire mortgage meltdown. We'll share a little bit more of this with you when we come back. McCain, you're such a lying son of a bitch. You make Hillary Clinton look honest. You know, Hillary lies about something that happened in Bosnia 10 years ago. Big whoop. McCain lies about something that is occurring now, and he has a plan that's going to make it worse for Americans. Accept your fate. They pull your car over and they beat you too. Oh, they want you to know they got their eye on you. They got their eye on you. They got their eye on you. They got their eye on you.
gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So John McCain last week was telling anyone who would listen, I think he was standing in front of a bunch of bankers. Maybe not. Maybe he was addressing the mouth-breathing Republicans who just want straight-talking John McCain to be president. This guy is, like I said, he's worse than Hillary in his lies. Hillary may pad her resume. She may talk about dodging sniper fire and so on and so forth. And, you know, that's kind of a fantasy. And if that's where Hillary wants to go, she's welcome to it. She must understand, of course, that she'll be any stories like that will be immediately all over YouTube with the actual video of what happened when she arrived 10 years ago or whenever it was. McCain on the so, you know, I mean, you can write that off as, oh, God, please, Hillary. But John McCain, this psychopath who stands here and says, well, my friends, I will never have anybody in my campaign who's associated with lobbyists. I just don't work that way. He stands in front of people and talks about how he's going to solve or rectify or correct or offer Band-Aids for the people suffering hideous results from this mortgage meltdown. And please don't adopt the right-wing garbage crap about these people are getting what's coming to them because they should never have done this and never should have done that. There is an element of truth in that, but the fact that it comes out of right-wingers' mouths immediately crashes the truth and makes it just right-wing gibberish. We're also talking about people who bought into the American dream and were told, well, here, step right up. I've got this wonderful mortgage for you. It's called an ARM. Don't let that scare you. It stands for ARM. Oh, you know the rest of the story. But McCain said, I will not play election year politics with the housing crisis. Oh, you lying bastard. Of course you will. Two of his top advisors were recent lobbyists for one of the worst lenders in the mortgage meltdown. That would be AmeriQuest Mortgage. John Green, that is McCain's chief liaison to Congress, and Wayne Berman, that's his national finance co-chairman. Between the two of them, billed more than $750,000 in lobbying fees from 2005 through last year to AmeriQuest Mortgage through their, what's this, lobbying firm. That's according to disclosure forms McCrazy had to file and were reviewed by the Daily News, New York Daily News. AmeriQuest, which has been bought out, was forced to settle suits with 49 states for $750 million. More than 13,000 New York homeowners got taken for a ride by the company, according to records. And the two big lobbyists for this predatory so-called lender now work for McCain. A guy named Bruce Marks, who's head of the nonprofit Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America, said these two would be defined, or no, I'm sorry, AmeriQuest would be defined as the most blatant and aggressive predatory lender out of everybody. And the two guys who suck $750,000 out of AmeriQuest for lobbying. Lobbying who? Well, who knows? But $750,000. A lot of mortgage payments there, huh? Now work for McCain. Now, a spokesman for McCrazy, a guy named Tucker Bonds, oh, God, Tucker Bonds says, quote, Senator McCain has never done anything that would violate the public trust, and he has never done favors for special interests or lobbyists, end quote. Oh, God. Now, as far as his plan, McCain's plan, it focuses on less regulation for the ghouls and vampires who infest the mortgage industry. Less regulation. Hey, dumbass, there's no regulation now with some of these companies. What are you talking about less? What's less than zero? Well, my friends, you know, when I was in being tortured, I didn't think about stuff like that. Anyway, Green and Berman, now working on McCain's campaign, having left their lobby shop, comes as John McCain faces criticism on other fronts for aligning himself with lobbyists, whom McCain always says, he always derides him, he always says, no, my friends, listen, my friends, I don't like lobbyists, my friends. And I would not have a lobbyist on my staff, my friends. I just wouldn't do it. However, McCain's campaign manager, Rick Davis, is a former telecommunications lobbyist. Telecommunications, telecoms, weren't they in the news lately? Something about spying, something about retroactive immunity. Yeah, okay. Anyway, McCain's campaign manager, Rick Davis, former lobbyist for the telecom industry, Thomas Loeffler, who's McCain's national finance co-chair, recently helped Europe's Airbus consortium land the deal for Air Force tankers, which took the deal away from American aerospace designers and builders like Boeing out in Seattle. So there you go. Now, you can draw your own conclusions with all that. You can draw your own conclusions. You can say, well, he just misspoke. He's no nonsense McCrazy. No, he's not. He's a liar. And he's a worse liar than Hillary Rodham Clinton because, as I said, Clinton's lies involve padding her resume, which probably you've done, truth seeker, huh? This rat bastard's lies has to do with the essential baseline quality of his campaign. He is a liar.
I was interested to see that Virgin Atlantic flew a 747 from London's Heathrow Airport to Amsterdam, fueled partly by coconuts.
you freak. Cat Mary in Memphis writes in, here's another way of looking at capitalism. You know, capitalism is always defined as competition for, ideas and resources and so on and so forth. Competition is defined as an event in which there are more losers than winners. Otherwise, it's not a competition. Therefore, a society based on competition is primarily a society based on losers. Thanks, Captain Mary. All right. As you know, George W. Bush, through astute money management and his dedication to the sport, became one of the operating managers of the Texas Rangers baseball team back in the day. I think he turned a $100,000 investment into a $6 or $20 or $80 million profit. The people of the great state of Texas, who the handful that wanted to bring the Texas Rangers into the great state of Texas, decided they needed a front man in order to get certain laws passed, so they went for the son of the former president of the United States, George Halfwit Bush Jr. And they made him an equity partner in the Texas Rangers. What did he have, Kathy? About 4%, 10%, 9 6/8%, whatever the hell it was. It was a gift to George W. Bush. All he had to do was use his name, which he did. The Texas Rangers built their stadium by confiscating land in where is it? Dallas? I don't even know. I really don't give a damn where it is. But it was done on the taxpayer's dime. And through bonds or tax increases or not bonds, but tax increases. I don't know. And I really don't care. Please don't anyone send me a link from Wikipedia telling me how the Texas Rangers Stadium was built. All I care to know about it was built on public money, and George W. Bush made a fortune, which helped him launch his political career. But that made him a baseball owner and manager because of what he did at the Texas Rangers. Well, he threw out the ceremonial first pitch at the Washington Nationals season opener yesterday in D.C., and it's the first game at Washington Nationals ballpark. But Chucklenuts probably didn't get the fan response he was hoping for. I want you to listen how 41,000 people in the sellout crowd reacted as he walked out to throw the first pitch.
There's the president, the 43rd president of the United States, George W. Bush. He will be throwing the first pitch out to Manny Acton. And here's the announcement by Jerome Haruska.
And here to throw out the inaugural pitch at Nationals Park to mark a new era of Washington baseball, the president of the United States.
Yeah, well, it goes on. You can see the video at YouTube. Just type in Bush, Washington Nationals, and you can watch it. The part that was intriguing to me was the dung-eating grin on his face as he came trotting up out of the visitor's dugout, or was it home team? I guess a home team dugout. He came trotting up on the field, you know, waving his hand. Well, 40,000, not everyone, but the vast majority of 41,000 people, it sounds like to me, booed his ass. But he's got that dung-eating grin on his face. Hi, I'm George Bush. I'm the dumbest son of a bitch ever to walk the earth. Well, not the dumbest, but I'm sure the dumbest ever to be in the White House. Hi, are y'all, what are you saying? Rude. We're rooting for you. Rude. Is that what you, you're saying boo? What does boo mean? Jesus, God, President of the United States, huh?
Well, Karl Rove told him they were saying, Bush.
Is that what it was? All right, now, on the same day Barack Obama was in Harrisburg, PA, at a town hall meeting, thousands of people lined up to get tickets the night before the way the press reports it, a cold, drizzling rain. Is that what they said? And 1,500 got in. And I want you to hear what he's got to say. This is a four-minute soundbite. But if you will, listen to what he has to say about women in the workplace.
We have to have strong enforcement of a basic principle. Same work, same pay. Same work, same pay. Period. All right? So that's got to be... That's the starting point. Woman's doing something that the man's doing, woman has to be treated fairly and get paid the same. It's a very simple principle. That's point number one. Point number two, though, is a lot of the reason that you still see a discrepancy between women's pay and men's pay on average is that our society does not do enough to support families, and women then bear the brunt of child rearing.
Amen.
Which puts them in a worse position economically.
Uh-huh.
So what happens is, you know, if you don't have enough child care out there, then, you know, a lot of times, men, you like to think that you are, you know, carrying the full weight. But it's the woman in the workforce more often than not who ends up having to change her schedule to deal with the emergency with the kids. If a child is sick or there's an aging parent and there's no paid sick leave or medical leave, then oftentimes it's the woman who ends up having to deal with it. And because of that, over time, that puts them at a disadvantage economically. Even if something as basic as just the lack of maternity and paternity leave, we're the only advanced nation that doesn't have it. So a woman is taking a month off, or, you know, if they're lucky, they get a little more time off, but now they're at a disadvantage in terms of some of their peers in the office, even though it's that man's baby just as much as the woman's.
Oh!
But somehow they don't have to make some of the same sacrifices economically. So that's why it is so important for us to put together the kinds of family-friendly policies. And I've talked about, first of all, expanding medical family or Family Medical Leave Act so that it covers more circumstances and it covers more people. I think we should create more paid leave situations, and I've proposed putting billions of dollars into helping states create paid leave situations, because right now a lot of people don't even take advantage of Family Medical Leave Act because it's not paid. You can't afford it. That's going to be important. We've got to drastically improve child care in this country, and that means on our tax code expanding the child care tax credit, but it also means creating better daycare facilities, particularly for infant care. All those things will make a difference in making it easier for families to balance work and family. That will in turn make it easier for women to balance their careers with their families, and that oftentimes can help level out some of the gaps in terms of income. But we still have to have strong enforcement of basic civil rights laws and equal pay for equal work. And that's something that, as a civil rights lawyer, I believe in very strongly. And if we combine those two things, I want to make sure my two daughters have the same rights and get the same opportunities as if I had two sons. That is a basic rule.
Wow.
Of America.
Wow, what a radical idea. Family leave, paid family leave, maternity leave, sick leave. You know, what the rest of the civilized, industrialized world has been doing for a number of years. I think America right now needs Barack Obama. I really do. For my radical friends out there who make a very strong argument that all these mainstream candidates are fatally flawed, I'm afraid I'm going to have to depart from that theory once again, or fact, and start to actively support to the degree that I can. I mean, I can't do anything, you know, this little talk show program where you and I get together every night is about as important in the big scheme of things as, I don't know, something not very important. But the more I listen to Barack Obama, the more I listen to his rhetorical approach, the way he lays out his ideas and the problem and the solutions, the way he approaches things with an attitude of can do, an attitude of, let's do something this time. You know, this time, or what do you say? Not this time. We're not going to buy the garbage this time. I think my mind is made up.
Paradise, he taught me paradise is in your mind. You know that there's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to lie. You better thank God for that.
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It is 10 before the hour. As you know, the capitalist ruling class, how's that, in this country is all of Twitter right now because they've been caught stealing, and all of a sudden the suckers are not lining up as willingly as they were lining up. The people who were told, look, we're going to create something out of nothing, all these new financial instruments, and not only are we going to create something out of nothing, but we are going to sell it across the spectrum, and people are going to buy it. And you know why they're going to buy it? Because we're going to tell them that it's a wondrous new investment in which they can't lose. And the internal structure of all these new instruments is going to be so arcane, so weird and twisted and screwed up, nobody will ever be able to figure it out. Now, we understand that the House of Cards is going to collapse. But hey, boys, if you got 2, 6, 7, 9, 12 million to jump in right now, jump in. This is once in a lifetime deal. Come on, boys. Belly up to the bar. Well, we know what happened as a result of that. These filthy snakes, these capitalistic pigs who couldn't care less about some miserable husband and wife with their kid or two and an aging grandparent, whether or not they keep, lose, or burn their house. They don't give a damn. Give me the money. And not only do I get you going in, but you poor bastard, when you lose your house, I'll be on the courthouse steps to buy it back and sell it to the next freak that comes along. I'll make money forever. See, in a just world, people like that would be taken out immediately and shot. But we don't live in a just world. We live in a capitalist world. And, you know, if you get caught with your drawers down, too bad, booby. Way too bad. A.E. writes in, a couple of weeks ago, the bankers tipped their hand when the J.P. Morgan Chase takeover of Bear Stearns was initiated. Today, they're showing more of their hand. The proposed expansion of the Federal Reserve's control over the American financial sector seems to have one particular goal, along with several others. The Federal Reserve will be taking over the duties of the Securities and Exchange Commission. The most obvious distinction between the SEC and the Federal Reserve is that the SEC ostensibly was set up as a government watchdog agency to protect the public and individuals from dishonest bankers and securities and investment sellers. The Federal Reserve, on the other hand, was set up by bankers such as J.P. Morgan, the man, not the corporation, so that they could have control over the national commercial banking institutions and money supply. So, by eliminating the watchdog, the SEC, the bankers will have less concern about the effect of their actions throughout the American financial sector, and not just in commercial banking. Yeah, what they're doing, you see, is privatizing. Privatizing to the point that the regulatory, what's left of it, strictures in place will become proprietary information. In other words, it's none of your business. Go away. Now, that's from AE. Prairie 2, AEB and Prairie 2 are the two financial advisors here that send a lot of really coherent, good information. Here's what Prairie 2 says. Mike, the Bush crime family has announced their desire to, quote, reform, end quote, the banking and securities business by basically doing away with government oversight agencies altogether. Instead, they want to give broad new powers to the Federal Reserve, which, unbeknownst to most people, is a private company, much like Halliburton. Now that it's going to be given enforcement powers, it is Blackwater in pinstripes. The excuse is that nobody has been regulating the investment banks like Bear Stearns. In fact, in 1999, when Clinton and the Republicans repealed the 1933 Glass-Steagall Act and completely deregulated investment banks, they gave oversight powers not to any government agency, but rather to the Federal Reserve, who chose to do absolutely nothing. The rationale was that the so-called free market would take care of everything. Under the proposed new law, the Federal Reserve, a private company, will have control of all banking, securities, and any institution or business that threatens economic stability. They will have power to seize assets that would make the IRS blush, since no crime need be alleged before they can act. Jesus, God. And then Prairie 2 adds as a postscript, in other news, food stamp use has reached its highest level ever. Ever. Close to 1 in 10 Americans are on food stamps, and in some states it's 1 in 8. Reforms, so-called, pushed through by Clinton in 1996, froze the standard deduction that people can take for living expenses. This stiffens eligibility requirements, resulting in dramatically reduced numbers of people who can get food stamps and provides less food for those who need it. and it gets worse every day as inflation drives up living costs. When you see Hillary, ask her why the village doesn't need to feed its children. Yeah, well, the trick bag has finally arrived. It's wide open, and it looks like every single one of us is going to be just kind of shuttled into the trick bag. This is what the bankers and sons of bitches tried to do to the country back in the 20s. They got away with it for a while, and all of a sudden the bottom fell out. Roosevelt came in, instituted a lot of regulatory agencies that, in fact, saved the banking industry so they could do this to us again. Now, they've done it again, but it's all been rehearsals. The savings and loan debacle. You pick them. There have been two or three since the Great Depression. But we always managed to pull back because of what the New Deal, what the Roosevelt administration, all of them, had put in place to stop this. But it's long been the goal of the capitalist Nazis in this country to remove all of those safeguards. Make it a free-for-all. They are so close, you can almost smell the brimstone. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program on Nova M. A couple of emails here that accumulated over the week. I want to share some with you. This is from Jay. I guess it's Jay. The subject line says, "Yes, you went too far." I'm not sure what he meant. He says, "Jesus, Mike, Hillary willing to sell her daughter in exchange for the presidency?" I think what he's referring to there is that... didn't I say, Kathy, when Chelsea was sent out to talk, knowing full well in the college circuit she's going to get the kinds of questions like she got again today, I said something. What did I say? Do you remember?
I wasn't listening.
Something about, God, she'd sell her own grandmother. I think I said something like that. Anyway, Jay writes, "Jesus, Mike, Hillary willing to sell her daughter in exchange for the presidency? Come on. I'm a Hillary supporter who has given you the benefit of the doubt on a nightly basis, mind you, when it comes to your views and beliefs regarding Hillary. I suppose my views of Obama are equally as obnoxious to those who don't happen to agree with my take on the world and politics. But good God, do you have no compassion whatsoever for Hillary as a fellow human being? Is there no line you won't cross to destroy and defile her?"
I should have been listening to that.
You
show.
Should have
that
been.
That sounds interesting.
Destroy and defile her? Anyway, the email goes on. "And then you have the audacity to openly wonder on air why people are so crazed in this election cycle. Are you effing kidding me? Keep fanning the flames, Mike. You're doing a bang-up job. It'll be people like you that we'll have to thank when we're all tending to our wounds and bruises after that inevitable loss this November." And then he signs it, "Peace." Jay, I'm sorry to disappoint you. I realize what I'm about to say just will go in one ear and out the other. But I have no intention of destroying Hillary Clinton or defiling her. I really don't. I happen to think she's a crappy-ass candidate to be president of the United States. That's all. I think John McCain is a crappy-ass candidate. I think most of them are. I think Obama brings something that is so far removed from Hillary's experience as to render it meaningless to her and apparently to her supporters, too. But I'm not interested in defiling her or destroying her. I really am not. And as far as fanning the flames, well, okay, if I tell on her, if that's fanning the flames, if I tell on her lies, if I tell on her voting record, if I also expose Obama's voting record, like I have, if that's fanning the flames of death and destruction and what else, defilement, oh, God. Well, okay, as far as the inevitable loss this November you reference, I guess you're talking about McCain winning. If McCain wins, it's not going to be because of me. Dear God, it'll be because of Diebold and Republican operatives and so on and so forth. There are only 37 people that listen to this program. Jay? Defile and destroy? Donald in Augusta writes, Mike, I can't understand the Hillary supporters. They bitch and moan about the state of America, yet they will support a person whose husband's presidency helped to usher in this misery. Hillary stated she wanted Alan Greenspan and Robert Rubin to take over management of this failed economy. Let me see, Donald writes. Alan Greenspan, who at all costs and a multimillionaire, lied about the effects of Bush's tax cuts and mismanaged fiscal Fed policy. And Robert Rubin, the architect of Clinton's trade policy, NAFTA, and deregulation of the media and the banking and financial industries, which has led directly to the foreclosure disaster. Can any one of Hillary's supporters please tell me how they can, on one hand, criticize Bush and the Republicans for this economy and financial mess, yet they support the person whose husband handed Bush the loaded gun to ruin our economy? How is it the cognitive dissonance of Clinton's supporters justifies their support of her experience, yet they can neither cite any independent experience she has, nor can they tie her White House experience to Bill's most disastrous policies? And we think the Republicans who vote that way are dumb as hell? Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, I said early on, several months back, that the emotional ties that people are demonstrating about Hillary Clinton that are deep-seated. I'd never heard of Barack Obama until the Senate race in Illinois. When was that? 3 years ago, Kathy? In 06? Was it 06? 04. It was 04. I had never heard of Barack Obama. I don't have any emotional tie to Obama whatsoever. I listen to what he says and how he says it. And I think this might be a person who could really work wonders with this country. He's not a savior. He doesn't walk on water. We've got 230 years of corruption. Barack Obama is not going to fix it. But he might inspire enough of us to fix it. As far as Hillary Clinton, I've known about Hillary Clinton since the 92 presidential run, which started in what, 90? So I've known about Hillary Clinton. I feel like I know everything there is to know about her for almost 20 years. Is that right? 16 years? I can't think. Yeah, 16 years. And I've never seen anything in Hillary Clinton's rhetoric or her actions that inspires me. Nothing. Zero. Absolutely nothing. I understand that people have an emotional investment. A lot of people look back on the Clinton years as wondrous years of, you know, not a single American soldier died in 8 years. Of course, we did an awful lot of murder and mayhem. There was a fake tech bubble, not unlike the housing bubble that started with Bush, as a result of the policy set up by Clinton. So everybody felt that everything was going fine. Yes, a lot of people went to work. Yes, a lot of things changed. But underneath what changed, Bill Clinton went to work on things like welfare reform, that's what he called it, and made it almost impossible. I mean, come on. 8 years of Clinton and then 8 years of this son of a bitch that sits in the White House now, and that's where we are. Sure, I'll dump half of it on George W. Bush. I don't like him because he's a warmongering idiot. But Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton wants to take, claim all this experience she got in the White House, in government, because her husband was president. Okay, what does that mean? You only pick and choose? Hillary Clinton lies through her teeth about these issues. Oh, well. This is from Paula, who writes, I saw a snippet of a piece about Obama's preacher having come out of seclusion to give a blessing to Maya Angelou for her 80th birthday. He was not the same so-called overzealous orator the mainstream media had played over and over again. He gave a simple blessing, the proper job of a black minister in America today. Obama, in his zeal to pacify the rabid radical right, stood for the man, but not the words which were the soul of the man, and now he is silenced. Free speech is for the haters and the intolerant and the insane. But free speech for a man of conscience has been silenced by one of our so-called own, Barack Obama. Who needs the thought police when the most powerful person in your congregation or party will not stand with you? And the most painful lesson of all, that they will not stand with you when you are speaking truth to power, truth to all people living with the realities of this insane criminal cabal. Obama has sold us down the river to placate the fascist element. And yet he wants us to believe that as president he will then speak truth? Just my opinion, just a thought. Wars cannot end all wars, only peace can end all wars. Peace always, Paula. So back and forth, back and forth, back and forth we go, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth we go. And in the process, as one of the emails pointed out but tried to lay it at my feet, the Democratic Party will be destroyed, which might be a good thing when you stop to think about it. At least that's the predictions we're getting, right?
It boils with every poison you can think of.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 22 past the hour. And just got a link from BD. Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell, who's a strong supporter and prominent surrogate of the Hillary Clinton campaign, appeared on Fox News morning show Fox and Friends today and praised Fox Network for its, quote, objective and, quote, balanced coverage. Now, you know what your mama told you when you were a kid growing up, not your mama, certainly your grandmother, that, you know, you're known by the company you keep, right? This is what Rendell told the program host Steve Doocy. Quote, I think during this entire primary coverage, starting in Iowa and up to the present, Fox has done the fairest job, has remained the most objective of all the cable networks. You actually have done a very balanced job of reporting the news. And some of the other stations are just caught up with Senator Obama, who's a great guy, but Senator Obama can do no wrong and Senator Clinton can do no right, end quote. Really? Does that bother anybody? And not anybody. Any Hillary Clinton supporter? Anybody there? Can I see some hands? That one of her key advisors, Ed Rendell, says to Fox News Channel, "Oh, you're doing a wonderful job. Thank you so much." That doesn't frighten you? Okay. All right. It's from John, who writes, "While we, the country, were busy thinking about Super Tuesday and events of that sort, Condoleezza Rice quietly appointed Paul Wolfowitz to the State Department's International Security Advisory Board." And John writes, "This concerns me more than the resignation of Admiral Fallon." And then he sent me a little clip here from Michael Isikoff at Newsweek. "Don't ever say the Bush administration doesn't take care of its own. Nearly 3 years after Paul Wolfowitz resigned as Deputy Defense Secretary and 6 months after his stormy departure as President of the World Bank amid allegations that he improperly awarded a raise to his girlfriend, he's in line to return to public service. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has offered Wolfowitz, a prime architect of the Iraq War, a position as chairman of the International Security Advisory Board, a prestigious State Department panel, according to two department sources who declined to be identified discussing personnel matters. The 18-member panel, which has access to highly classified intelligence, advises Rice on disarmament, nuclear proliferation, weapons of mass destruction issues, and other matters. One senior official said, we think Wolfowitz is well-suited, will do an excellent job." Oh, my God. Wolfowitz, now a visiting scholar at the Conservative American Enterprise Institute, will replace former Senator Fred Thompson, who quit over the summer to run for president. Although officials declined to say how Rice came to choose him, Wolfowitz began his government career in the 70s, State Department, as an arms control expert. Oh, yeah. He forged a relationship with Rice during the 2000 presidential campaign, when they both served as top foreign policy advisors to then-candidate George W. Bush. But his selection has raised more than a few eyebrows within the State Department because he will be providing advice on some of the same issues that critics say the administration got spectacularly wrong when Wolfowitz was pushing the case for the Iraq War at the Pentagon. One of the department sources called the appointment, quote, amazing, end quote. The sources said Wolfowitz has already accepted Rice's offer to fill the part-time position, though it won't be announced until the completion of a standard check for conflicts of interest. But he won't have to worry about any complaints from pesky Democrats. The position doesn't require Senate confirmation. Wolfowitz, a Likudnik, an American Zionist, a person who wants to see the United States up to its eyeballs in every conceivable conflict in the Middle East, and is willing to notify his friends in the Israeli government that the United States will, in fact, back Israel if Israel decides to initiate a war as Bush has. And speaking of all that, Israel's President Shimon Peres, who I kind of thought was a little bit on the peace side, but I guess I've made a mistake here. Peres, well, here's the, this is from PressTV.ir, which is an Iraqi news agency, or Iranian news agency. Oh, there's the music. Okay, I'll share this with you when we come back. But Israel's President Shimon Peres had some interesting stuff to say about Iran. And we'll have that when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, you people like to write and call me an anti-Semite? Hurry up. Warm up your computers. Come on. I'm going to say something very anti-Israel coming back. You bet your ass. So warm them up.
We will not count the cost. We will pay. Pickles Bush. When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malone. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
It's about 25 before the hour. So, yeah, it's a little bit shocking to me. I don't know. I shouldn't be shocked anymore about things said by anyone in the government of Israel any more than anyone in the government of the United States. But Shimon Peres, Israel's president, is, to use a time-worn cliche, pointing his finger at Iran, saying that that country would not need long-range missiles if it weren't seeking nuclear armament. Peres said, quote, "Why are they building long-range missiles, which are extremely expensive? And those missiles, you put in only warheads that have the capacity of mass destruction. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense." Now, apparently, Peres said that to a U.S. or UN envoy to the Mideast, Robert Seri, in a Thursday meeting last week. He continued, quote, "They build the missiles of all ranges, short range, medium range, 1,500 kilometer range. What for?" End quote. And then the Iranian press agency goes on, "This is while the Zionist regime itself bars inspections of its nuclear facilities and is widely believed to have over 200 nuclear warheads in its arsenal. Israel calls its approach of neither denying nor admitting that it has nuclear weapons, quote, strategic ambiguity," end quote. Iran, however, is a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty and allows the UN nuclear watchdog to conduct inspections of its nuclear programs. Israel does not. So the person who sent me this, Dr. D, says, in answer to the question, why is Iran building long-range missiles, the answer might be, gee, I don't know, maybe as a deterrent to the 200 nuclear weapons in Israel's possession and to the constant threats of attack from both Israel and the West. You think? Just a hunch? Yeah, that is kind of galling. I usually just don't really pay that much attention to what Likudniks say in Israel. But in our country, when you know our government says, well, we're not going to tolerate nuclear weapons in blank, fill in the blank, but we have the most deadly nuclear arsenal in the history of the human race, A, B, we're the only country that has ever used these weapons in an act of war to slaughter civilian populations, slaughter civilian populations. But where it concerns U.S. policy, this is one of the hard things for Americans to internalize. We don't care when it comes to defending American foreign policy, whether those policies are economic or based on empire or based on sucking in natural resources, whatever it is. All those policies have their roots, of course, in the absolute necessity of capitalism to continue to find cheaper labor and expanding markets and more raw materials and so on and so forth at whatever cost it takes. So since that is the case, and no one can make an argument against that point of view, you simply can't. It's one of the definitions of capitalism, one of the definitions of U.S. imperialism. Since that is the case, we being the people who formulate the policies, you care, I care, but the policies are formulated on the basis of collateral damage. It will exist. It doesn't matter. 10,000, 100,000, 200,000 dead, 1 million dead, 3 million dead, it doesn't matter. It's so simple. And this is the part that Americans, myself included, can't completely, I can't get my mind around that. If I stop and think about that for any length of time, say longer than the time it takes to say it on a radio program, I would probably go insane. Because I was brought up, I wasn't born on the 4th of July, but I was born on the 1st of July, which is close enough. And, I was brought up to get a little lump in my throat when the flag went by. And, every American soldier, no matter what he does or she does, is a hero. And U.S. foreign policy has always been based in God is on our side, and we're only interested in spreading freedom and democracy. And when you finally reach a point where you realize that all of that is a lie, those are lies of commission. When you check into the lies of omission, you come away gray-haired, your eyes wide open, your hands trembling, your bowels have turned to liquid, and you're wondering, what? 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 So. And this is from, in the subject line, it says it's from another anti-Semitic bastard. This is a quote from Mahatma Gandhi that says, Palestine belongs to the Arabs in the same sense that England belongs to the English or France to the French. It is wrong and inhuman to impose the Jews on the Arabs. What is going on in Palestine today cannot be justified by any code of conduct. The British mandates have no sanction but that of the last war. He's referring, of course, to World War I. Surely it would be a crime, or World War II, I'm sorry. Surely it would be a crime against humanity to reduce the proud Arabs so that Palestine can be restored to the Jews, partly or wholly, as their national home. I am not defending the Arab excesses. I wish they had chosen the way of nonviolence in resisting what they rightly regard as an unwarranted encroachment upon their country. But according to the accepted canons of right and wrong, nothing can be said against the Arab resistance in the face of overwhelming odds. Gandhi. Well, even the Arab-hating Rabbi Meir Kahana said essentially the same thing. And let me see, do we got time for this? Well, Heather, I'd like to read your email about, as a woman, you have, oh, what the hell. She writes, Mike, as a woman, I have extra purposeful, I have felt extra purposeful when speaking out against Hillary because it seems only women have the so-called right to do so in today's insane political climate. Yep, I'm an unashamed, unrestrained, proud Hillary basher. And I've had to deal with the hailstorm of Hillary supporters and blind faith feminists for a while now. I hear all the remarks about being sexist if you're not a supporter, and it completely infuriates me. It's the equivalent of saying you're a racist if you don't support Barack, and I'm personally sick of all the crap being talked about when assessing our political candidates. Sex, religion, and race are completely irrelevant when it comes to political ability. Get over it, people, and quit doing the mainstream media's evil bidding. Hillary is an incessant liar, and she has absolutely proven herself to be an anything-goes and whatever-it-takes whore for the Oval Office. Common people, do you really want another liar-in-chief? I anticipated her run a couple of years ago, and I've been watching her very closely ever since. I watched her support Republican red herring issues like flag burning with total disgust, and when it came to voting for appropriations for the war, I watched her live on C-SPAN. I watched her live on C-SPAN wait until she was absolutely sure her vote didn't matter before voting against it, as if she was anti-war. Is that really the kind of leadership so-called Americans want? Not me. God, have I told you tonight how much I hate this candidate. However, I'm not so stupid as to vote McBush if she does manage in a way, does manage a way in there. Smarten up, people. I don't want to see another cover of a magazine overseas reading, "How can 300 million people be so dumb?" Heather. Okay. We got time for one more. I guess these things that we had lined up for tonight, Kathy, we may have to get to tomorrow, but because I want to get some calls in here, and folks are starting to line up. Let me see. George in Seattle writes, Mike, the right-wing racists are really coming out of the woodwork now. These guys thought they were delivering the knockout punch with this Reverend Jeremiah Wright nonsense, but Barack Obama turned it back around on them, and they don't like what they see in the mirror. Now for the facts. What Reverend Wright said was at least 95% right on, and when Reverend Wright said the words, God damn America, he used the two-word version of God damn, not the one word, God damn. Don't these right-wingers know the difference? Reverend Wright also put what he said into context by saying it was according to biblical scripture. Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, and a host of other right-wing nutball preachers said that God actually did damn America on 9/11 and with Katrina. for what they said was the behavior of segments of America. But if these clowns on the right were correct about God's damning of America on 9/11 and the Katrina hurricane, then God's aim must have been pretty bad, as a lot of good innocent people died in those events, while a lot of the really bad people in this country go on saying and doing the opposite of what the Bible says. And so far, God has not held them accountable. George in Seattle. Yeah, I know, but every time I get an email, and no offense here, George, every time I get an email like that, and I understand the irony of what you've written, but it just I don't know, it makes my skin kind of crawl a little bit, because I think what we're discussing is an imaginary super spook being creature that floats around in the ozone going, well, I think I'll kill those today. No, let me think. No, I'll kill those over there. No, let me see. I know. Let's cross the River Jordan. Joshua, you can go, but Moses, you stay here. We'll cross the River Jordan. We'll slaughter every single Canaanite. I want their men killed. I want their women killed. I want their children killed. And if you find any pregnant women, I want you to cut open their stomachs, rip the fetus out, and smash them up against the rock.
Praise the Lord and hit them hard. The devil must have his due. As all the weapons of Uncle Sam, the smallpox Indian blankets, the bombs that beat Japan. Bless the cops and prisons that make us free. This land was made for me.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
Ten before the hour. Okay, I see the phones are all lit up and ready to go. I guess you've heard that thousands of Katrina victims may have to pay back thousands of dollars. As reported by Newsday, imagine that your home was reduced to mold and wood framing by Hurricane Katrina, and desperate for money to rebuild, you engage in a frustrating bureaucratic process, and after months of living in a government-provided trailer tainted with formaldehyde, you finally win a federal grant. Then a collector calls with the staggering news that you have to pay back thousands of dollars. Now, why would that be? Well, a private contractor, well, there's a surprise, under investigation for the compensation it received from the feds to run the so-called Road Home Grant Program to Katrina victims, says that, in the rush to deliver aid to homeowners in need, some people got too much. And now it wants to hire a separate company to collect millions in grant overpayments. The contracting company is ICF International, Fairfax, Virginia, and it revealed the extent of the overpayments when it issued a March 11th request for bids from companies willing to handle approximately 1,000 to 5,000 cases that will necessitate collection effort. So, of course, a third of the qualified applications for this Road Home Grant Program had yet to receive any rebuilding check as of this week, and we're coming up on 3 years now, aren't we? The program is financed by $11 billion in federal funds. You have that much money out there for something like, oh, I don't know, let's think, Katrina reconstruction or rebuilding the damage we did in Iraq. There's a couple of quick examples. When you have that much money floating, that big of a pool of greenbacks, even though they're becoming more and more worthless on the open market, you still have the filthy, predatory, capitalist, pig bastard corporations in this country and their surrogates. These companies are set up, private contractors set up to distribute this amount of money. Why not have it distributed by Housing and Urban Development? Oh, that's right. That guy is going to go to prison. Well, let me think. What to do? I know. Just start stealing. And then blame the hapless former homeowner who watched as his entire or her entire life was blown away. in floods and wind. Oh, that's good. And then go back to them and say, give me back my money. It's the way the United States of America and the George Bush administration responded to the tragedy that was Katrina in all its many manifestations is going to be another permanent scar on this country. Another permanent reminder that we are not the land of the free and the home of the brave, that our intentions are not honorable, that our intentions are murderous, greedy, selfish, and vile, and that those intentions are facilitated every single time we get a Republican anywhere near a seat of power. County commission, school board, governorship, Congress, presidency. You let a Republican near those offices, and guaranteed that what flows from those offices will stink and be corrupt. And this event of Katrina and what occurred on the U.S. Gulf Coast, it's never going to go away. The stench of that is never going to go away. In the meantime, the predators just continue to come. They just continue to come. They don't care. What, you lost your home, boy? Shoot. Well, that's just a shame, isn't it? Now, move out the way. I got to build a casino here. Dirty, filthy. You know, it can't go on forever. Eventually, people who feel the way people who are trampled in the society feel, the way, and I'm not just talking about Katrina victims. I'm also talking about workers, former union members, who watch their jobs disappear, and if they try to strike, the scabs come in and take the jobs. Average middle-income Americans, people who thought they were buying in the American dream, it can only go so long. And as this disparity in income increases, this is one of the precursors to open armed revolution. When it finally gets to the point where the top 2, 3, 4, 5% control 50, 60, 70% of the wealth, and the rest of the people in a given country are treated like dreck, like so much scum on the bottom of somebody's shoe. At some point, then, read your history, somebody comes out of that dying middle class and says it's time to lock and load and take to the hills. And I don't, I mean, this is a stupid thing to say. I was going to say, I don't know why the predators who are running this country don't realize that. They do realize it. But with everything privatized, with the military otherwise occupied, laws in place to lock this country down at the flip of a switch, I guess they feel, hey, we can do anything we want to do. Is that true? Can they? Can they do anything they want to do? Alfonso Jackson announced today he's quitting. The Bush administration's top housing official. His resignation will take effect April 18th. He's under criminal investigation by the Justice Department. And he says that he needs time to attend to personal and family matters. So he's going to resign. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back. This is the Malloy program on Nova M Radio. Oh, yeah. Last thing here. Iraqi lawmakers, that would be the people we support in that sad, butchered country, traveled to the Iranian holy city of Qom over the weekend to win the support of the commander of Iran's Quds brigades in persuading Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr to order his followers to stop military operations. And, of course, as you heard over the weekend, as a result of that, al-Sadr did order his people, his militias, to stop firing. He called a halt on Sunday, and his militia followed the order in Baghdad. Now, fighting continues in Basra, where the now six-day-old government offensive against Shiite militias is only limited gains. As a matter of fact, they haven't gained anything. But so far, nearly 500 people have been killed and 900 wounded in the offensive. That's according to the Iraqi Interior Ministry. In a failed state like Iraq, the Interior Ministry is usually where all the torture goes on and where they take people in and remove their toenails and fingernails and testicles and earlobes and little toes and fingers to extract information. So while we are threatening to nuke Iran, the puppet government that we support turns to the Iranians for help in order to stop a nationalist Iraqi, Muqtada al-Sadr, from continuing to show the absolute ridiculousness and ineffectiveness on the of the Iraqi army, so-called. Isn't this madness? Isn't this a clear, perfect example of insanity? Now, if Cheney has his way and the attack commences against Iran, who is our puppet going to turn to? Our puppet in Iraq, who is he going to turn to in Iran for help in stopping, well, I think you understand. Let's do some phone calls here. John is calling from San Jose, California, listening on Sirius. Hey, John.
Mike, it might be a while before I can talk to you again, so I wanted to get this in. I really appreciate what you're saying about the hypocrisy of the United States and Israel. You know, just muscle-bound and threatening with the U.S.'s 10,000 powerful nuclear weapons, Israel's hundreds, all of them pointed at Iran, threatening Iran with unprovoked attack, having aircraft carriers, nuclear aircraft carriers, prowling around their coast, threatening to attack them. According to Seymour Hersh, we're sending in terrorists, some al-Qaeda type terrorists that really are on, have always been on the payroll of the CIA,
right,
into Iraq on one side, and these Kurdish terrorists, yeah, going in on the other side.
You mean into Iran? Don't you?
Into Iran, I'm sorry.
Right.
Into Iran. And special forces infiltrating, going in to set up targets for attack. All of this going on, if you turn that around and Iran had the power to invade Canada and Mexico and was threatening us and sending in terrorists into our territory, I mean, what would we do? But this is accepted as normal by the corporate media in this country. It's,
right.
And beyond that, it's accepted as normal by Obama. And I think as outrageously rabid McCain is, and as duplicitous and warmongering Hillary is, I think there's a real tendency that I see among Democrats, Air America, and the rest of it, when the same kind of words that come out of Cheney's mouth come out of his mouth, somehow
What about Obama?
That's exactly what I'm saying. When Obama...
He is just as bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. When he says we've got to keep a military strike on the table against Iran, an unprovoked attack, a genocidal attack, people make excuses for it. When Bush and Cheney say the same thing, by God, I'm going to go out in the streets and protest it. When he endorses this wretch Lieberman, it's okay. When Bush and McCain are kissing face with him, this shows what a rotten SOB Lieberman is and Bush is. There's got to be a single standard here, and I think we've really got to get some alternate sources like ZNet.org, WSWS.org, and others, because if we don't, I think we're going to, in effect, be neutralized and diffused and making excuses for very similar policies. I was reading in.
Well, wait. Let me ask you. If I certainly don't disagree. I've read on Obama's website his kind of belligerent statements about Iran. But let me ask you something. Is it not possible that what he is saying about Iran is the usual campaign saber-rattling rhetoric? But he's also said that he would have no problem, didn't he, sitting down and talking with people like Ahmadinejad or whomever.
Yeah, well talking and then bombing doesn't make that much difference. Even Bush has said that. You know, we want to bring in the international community. There's always this fig leaf, and it doesn't really mean anything. People like Brzezinski, who was one of his unofficial main advisors,
right,
a very sinister character, he supported the Pol Pot forces in the last year of the Carter administration, as well as al-Qaeda before the Soviets went in. He bragged about it just recently, in recent years, in the New Observer in France, saying that it was a great idea to send these billions of dollars and weapons to the Mujahideen, including the al-Qaeda, because we suckered the Soviet Union to go in 6 months later. We started that whole war. We destroyed a progressive government that was friendly to the Soviet Union. We caused all of that over there. And this is somehow championed by Democrats and Republicans as some great victory. And he said, I don't care that it built up al-Qaeda. You know, it helped destroy the Soviet Union. Now, having those kinds of associates and making the statement after Reverend Wright made these very powerful statements that you and me and many millions of others agree with, he comes out with a statement on the Huffington Post saying, I categorically denounce any statement that denigrates our great country and our stalwart ally, Israel. This goes beyond the pale. That kind of stuff you hear from Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly.
I know, John. I swear to God, I know what you're talking about. I hear what you're saying. John, thanks. I got to move on. John sounds exactly like, and the points are well taken. They're right on. John's been calling me for 22 years. And I've never really fundamentally disagreed with anything he said, although it's hard to get a word in edgewise. But John says exactly the same thing, comes from exactly the same position as a good friend of mine in Illinois, Lance, the same position. And tonight it just so happens I got an email from Lance and a phone call from John, and they're both saying essentially the same thing. They are not going to play this corrupt game anymore. They are not going to vote for Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or John McCain because they understand the corruption involved here with all three. And just when I start to feel like, okay, look, you know, I give, I'll go ahead and become a full-blown, whistle-blowing, flag-waving Barack Obama supporter because he does move me with his rhetoric, then I get the email from Lance and the phone call from John, and once again, I'm just turned out into the wilderness. Poor Mikey. But a lot of, I'm sure a lot of you feel that way who don't have brain freeze. You know, you start thinking, okay, there's got to be a way out of this. I think I'll go with this candidate. And then, you know, the truth comes and crawls up your pants leg and bites you on the ass. So I don't know. To John and to Lance, you know, what can I say? I don't know what to say. I'm going to stay home and get under my blanket and just go back, revert back to sucking my thumb. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
easy. A vote for me. Yes, vote for me. To the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guarantee.
Don't be left out. Join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
Yeah, that's true. From Prairie 2, Mike, the reason the Bush crime family isn't trying so hard to put off the inevitable consequences of what they've been doing to the banking system isn't because of the mortgage crisis or ballooning foreclosures. It's because the investment banks have completely eliminated much of the wealth that the Republican base thinks that they have. Everybody whose wealth is printed on a piece of paper is as broke as that old homeless vet sitting on the curb. They just don't know it yet. Ooh. why am I laughing? So I don't cry. That's scary. Oh, well. It certainly doesn't affect us, does it, Kathy? Yeah, our stock portfolio is XM Satellite Radio, I think. That's about it, isn't it? All right, back to your phone calls. Dave is calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on the Internet. Hey, Dave.
How you doing, Mike? I came up with a saying a little over 2 years ago and wrote on a T-shirt and seemed to make a big hit, but it really applies more now since McCain turned on himself about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And the saying is, put it on your T-shirts, cups, it's out there for the world to use. Mm-hmm. Want a Bush clone? Vote GOP.
Oh, there you go.
So, you know, send the word out, and it may give you a little bit of hope here.
All right. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate. Want a Bush clone? Vote GOP. You know, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, that'll get you beat up. Dave's got a lot of courage. Will is calling from Oakland, California, listening on the Internet. Hey, Will, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much for taking my call this evening.
Sure.
Just two quick things. I'll try to be brief. I know you got a lot of calls. Just wanted to say how much I appreciate everything you do. I've been listening to you for a while. This call is long overdue. And I hope you never quit. We need you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate. I can't quit. I've got to put one more kid through school.
Right. Exactly. I just want calling from California here, and I just wanted to say, you mentioned in a previous broadcast you were a film buff, and I hope I heard that right.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But I was just wondering if you've ever seen the movie Children of Men.
Yeah, that was the Brazilian movie. No. Which one was it, Kathy?
The one with Clive Owen, where it was the future and there was only one little baby left.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
I was
thinking City of God. Never mind. Children of Men.
Right.
Yes, we've seen it.
Yeah. Anyway, the reason I bring that up, in addition to having a fabulous story and characters and plot, I believe if anybody, and I've been thinking about this for a while because when I saw it, it affected me deeply. I believe if anybody wants a really accurate portrayal of where this world is headed, thanks to the Bush crime family, thanks to, as you were mentioning before, this just unbelievable predatory nature of the people that we have in office right now, they should see that movie. Just an ultra-police state, a paranoia, dilapidated infrastructure, and just a total disregard, for humanity and immigrants. I mean, it's a shocking portrayal of where I think this world is headed if people don't get as angry as you get and just as riled up and want to make some changes in the way that this country is going. And I just, anyway, that's all I wanted to say. I mean, it's just...
Well, when we watched that film, Will, I think Kathy and I watched it on a Saturday night, and I think we were depressed for at least a week.
Right. It'll do that.
It's a scary, scary movie, and like Road Warrior, like so many of those movies that were prescient in giving us a glimpse of a future that had just been absolutely decimated by our own habits. That movie did the same. So,
yep.
I would recommend it too. Children of Men. It's a good flick. All right. Well, thanks
so much, Mike.
All right,
best
Will,
of luck to you.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for
you
checking in. Yeah, I don't remember being exactly uplifted after that. Do you, Kathy?
You asked where we went and got the little box of suicide medicine
right.
that they had in the film.
No, that was in On the Beach.
No, it was the same thing. They used that in a lot of movies.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a fairly common device these days.
I prefer
the suicide box.
I prefer cannibalism. All right, we have a break coming up here. There are two open lines, and we're going to take phone calls for the rest of the program. So if you want to get in, come in. 800-989-1480. Is the number. Jack writes in, good evening, Mike. I don't know if you've yet read what should be a clarion call for America. There's an article here that written by Paul Craig Roberts, whom we've quoted a lot of times. It appears at Op-Ed News. Paul Craig Roberts, former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury in the Reagan years. But the article talks about how the Russians and the Saudis expect a U.S. attack on Iran. They expect it. They expect it. You can see this article at opednews.com, written by Paul Craig Roberts. We'll talk about it a little bit probably tomorrow night because we're not going to get to it tonight. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
He has been told to say it clear, to say it cool. It's over. It ain't going any further. And now the wheels of heaven stop. Ride and crop, get ready for the future. It is murder. Bang the gun, slide.
Slide in all directions.
A peace, free, and secure Iraq in the midst of the Middle East will have enormous historical impact.
Yeah, it will. Except for one thing. Nobody on this planet, George, knows what the hell you mean by that. But it sounds important. Appeance, freeance, Iraq. Vic is calling from Cedar Creek, Texas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Vic.
Hey, Mike. Maybe in a couple of minutes we can put Israel in perspective. Now we all know why we went to Iraq and why we looked to Iran. It's for strategic position and, of course, to steal their natural resources, which is, you know, more oil than we could possibly use. But people wonder, what the heck's up with Israel? And we don't talk about that. Israel has no natural resources to speak of. They got about 7 million people, and guess what? Them people are pretty smart, and they work for about $100 a day. American corporations have employed these 7 million people in a big way. Intel, you know, you heard of Intel. They've been in Israel since 1974. They started out with 30 employees. They have 8,000 now. Now, here's a little twist, too. With the country that I call America's 51st state. We send about $1 billion in aid to Israel. Israel government turns around and gives it to American corporations to build factories over there, General Electric, Intel. We do about the United States is Israel's largest trading partner. You know, surprise, surprise. We do about $15 billion worth of chips and integrated circuits and electronics that the smart people in Israel build. So it's not a secret, although I don't think a lot of people are aware of that. I don't like the money laundering, you know, the send the aid over there and then it turns around and builds American factories in Israel. But the fact of the matter is that it gets back to follow the money, and it's U.S. corporations in Israel, and they will protect that. And Israel is not a threat to any of our oil interests in the Middle East. They use oil. They don't have any. So, you know, Iraq was and Iran is. But Israel's no threat. Israel's a big trading partner. You know, you can load millions of dollars worth of those little silicon wafers and chips and completed computers onto an airliner and fly it over here. So you have a small amount of product that's worth a lot of money. But that's the deal. You know, it's just money.
But
it's got nothing to do with their religion or anti-Semitism. It's American corporate interest, and they are flourishing in Israel. They are big on the stock market. That's what it's all about.
Okay, but what you've described so far, and I certainly don't disagree with you, what you've described so far, though, is no different from the relations that the United States has with a number of countries.
Well, correct. And if that's threatened, or well, it's a perception of threat. I don't think Iran gives a cares to bomb Israel. I think it's an excuse that we're protecting Israel with all our corporate interests over there that we go after Iran. But that would wrap up. That would give us more oil than Saudi Arabia.
Well, I hear what you're saying, Vic. I'm not too sure where you were going with that, but I certainly don't disagree as far as you went. I think there's more to it than that. Israel has been seen to be a strategic partner of the United States for the past half century, primarily because of the Cold War, but also to give us a friendly base in an area whose assets we want, and that's the oil. As long as we have a working relationship with these corrupt regimes like Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, okay, everything's fine. But then we get greedy because the resources are starting to run out, and the oil industry needs more and more profits. So we look at Iraq and Iran, and having a friendly, i.e. Israel, covering our backs gives us the kind of cover that we feel we need. I don't doubt for a second, though, that the United States would turn on Israel and devour it if it served U.S. purposes. And I think Israel understands that, too, and I think that's one of the reasons so many Israeli sympathizers have key positions within the United States government. They are not kidding themselves to the degree that we kid ourselves. Israel understands, because they've been through this, they understand what it feels like to have a superpower turn against the Jews. Now, this has been going on for how many hundreds of years? I mean, go back to the Crusades, when they came out of Northern Europe and would just stop for the sport of it in Southern Europe and slaughter as many Arabs and Jews as they could find on the way to the Holy Land on their mission for Jesus. So it sounds like I'm building an apologia for Israel, which I am not. But I think the Israelis understand full well that the United States, especially since the United States is in the thrall of these right-wing Christian fanatics, and it's getting worse, I think Israel understands that their head is on the chopping block, and the U.S. has a hand on the cord to release the blade. So how does Israel handle that? Well, they make sure they understand exactly what's going on within the deepest reserves of the U.S. government. And the way they do that is to make sure that they have American Zionists in positions of key power, or key positions of power in this country, up to and including decision-making power, foreign policy decision-making power. Now, some would argue that, well, hell yeah, if you make a pact with the devil, as Israel did with the United States, then there comes a point where you realize that the devil with whom you've made a pact is extremely dangerous, can devour you if it chooses to do so. So you try to divert, to some degree, the devil's monumental terror and horror, divert it away from you. Look, go eat him. Go eat that one. Don't eat me. That sort of thing. So I guess I don't know if that ties into what you were saying at all. And I'm not sure where you were going. I think the relationship with your points there, the relationship between the United States and Israel was strategic for decades on the part of the U.S. It was tactical on the part of Israel. In my opinion, I'm certainly no foreign policy expert, but that's the way I've come to see it. And now it's to the point where, with the rise of the Christian fanatics in this country, I think the Israelis are starting to get more and more nervous because they realize that their deal with the devil, with the United States, is decaying to the point where the U.S. cannot be trusted. I think that's one of the reasons for the Pollard case. I think it's one of the reasons for so many of these instances where some of the largest spy operations extant in this country are run by Israelis. They're not run by Russians or Iranians or Chinese. They're run by Israelis. It's a matter of survival. You know, when the Jews talk about never again, they're not kidding. And the one country on earth that could incinerate Israel is not Iran. It's the United States. And they know that. So, for whatever it's worth. Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Michael.
Hey.
How's things going?
Well, let me see. I noticed that the price of eggs is getting out of control. I don't know what the hell that has to do with the price of oil, but it's happening. Have you noticed that?
Well, you know, they keep saying that everything travels by truck, and because the drivers have to, buy diesel and all that good stuff. Tomorrow's the 1st of April, right?
It's supposed to
be some kind of a, what do they call it? They don't call it a strike. They call it a work
slowdown?
It's something.
Stoppage? Whatever the truckers do, I am 1,000,000,000% behind. Even if it affects me and my little life.
These
men and women are just being pushed to the limit of endurance. I don't know how these men and women, the truck drivers.
The phrase owner operated.
Yeah.
These are the guys that are getting screwed six ways against Sunday because there are certain companies that are trying to put them out of business. These mm-hmm. guys are working, 12, 18 hours a day. And the latest twist, and it's going to lead me into something else, is that if their expenses reach the point that it could have an effect on their credit history, well, by golly, guess who gets to raise their premium?
I hear you. Let me put you on hold a second.
Okay.
We'll come right back and pick this up again, Marge. Yeah, let me be real clear about that. The over-the-road drivers are taking it on the chin. I don't know how they're doing it. Anything they do to fight back, I support completely. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
No concern to us as long as we get our hands on that greasy, slimy stuff. For the love of oil, we lost 4,000 people. For the love of oil, how many more will die? For the love of oil, we're roasting our green planet. It's not worth all the tears I've had to cry.
Ten before the hour, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Chris in Minnesota, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf. Thanks, everybody, for the program tonight. Catherine Bay is the executive producer. And if you haven't become a Nova M founding member yet, go to NovaMradio.com and consider it, okay? Free downloads, free podcasts when you want them, access to special videos and all sorts of features. So we'll look for you in the founders circle.
Circle?
Back to Marge, who has called in from Indiana. All right, where were we?
We were talking about the truckers. The phrase I was looking for and couldn't think of it was job action.
Yeah.
Owner-operators, they're independent. They don't have a union, so they can't, call they don't want to use the word strike because it conjures up bad feelings.
Right.
So they're calling it a job action. But these people are getting screwed six ways against Sunday, and nobody seems to shivig it. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
It's just disgusting. And you know, they spent a year and a half in court arguing whether it was wind-driven or wind-driven water or a regular flood before they would even consider paying off these people that lost their homes along the Gulf Coast after Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And now the thing that I heard Saturday that just absolutely turned my stomach upside down, the company with the heart, you know, the one that has such a great health plan that their employees go to welfare to get their health needs met.
That would be Walmart.
Yeah, those guys.
Yeah.
Did you hear the latest on the story about Debbie Shank?
Yes, the woman who is being sued by Walmart.
She already is. They collected. No, she was injured in a truck accident, left her permanently injured and brain damaged.
Right.
Her husband sued, collected damages, and then Walmart comes along and says, well, to be fair to our associate, it's written down in the fine print of our insurance contract mm-hmm. that we're entitled to this money that you recovered from the lawsuit.
I know. Isn't that nice?
Oh,
you know, I was going to.
God, I can't think of vile enough language, and if I did, it would turn your place into a parking lot in 2 seconds.
I hear that. I was going to talk about that last week, Marge, and I could not bring myself to do that story. I just couldn't.
Oh, God, how can people be so vile?
Rules are rules, baby.
Oh, is that what it is? Greed is greed, baby.
right. Capitalism is capitalism. Predatory capitalism is the creme de la creme of the fraud industry.
They offer a subprime mortgage rate. They don't even take anybody's check anybody's employment history, let alone their income. They give them a loan that they can't afford on an adjustable rate mortgage that's going to change. And then they sell them off and they resell them off. And when they lose their ass, well, then they go running. Well, we can't let Bear Stearns lose their money because, you know, it's going to cause all these problems.
Right.
But all these other people that, you know, that working three jobs to make ends meet and they're going to lose their houses. And you know what's even worse? I saw a story in the news the other night where this couple in Oakland, California, they're renters.
Mm-hmm.
They're totally innocent of the whole damn thing. They're paying their rent.
And they're being tossed out.
And they're being tossed out by the bank. And the bank says, what is it? We'll give you $1,000 to leave right away. And if you don't, why, you know, we're going to throw your butt out anyway.
Right, because the person who owns the house is in default.
Right.
Right.
Well, Isn't that lovely?
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. It's just amazing how quickly the financial rapists and the predators under the Bush crime family, and of course a lot of it was set up during the Clinton administration. The rules were put in place, and then Bush too just unleashed the hounds of hell, and it only took them seven plus years to utterly and absolutely put the entire financial system of the United States in jeopardy. After 230 years, these rat bastards, Marge, have done it in 7 years. It's not that they're screwing over the worker. It's not that they're screwing over the middle class. It's not that they're have shredded our military. It's not that. But the bigger thing, the biggest thing is they have taken our entire financial system, as shaky, arguably, as capitalism of this sort can be, but they have taken it and finally accomplished what they set out to do immediately after Roosevelt, and that was to undo every single regulatory restriction.
Oh, you said the magic word.
What? Roosevelt?
No, regulatory.
Right. To undo it all. And once it's undone, it's like a very, very large circus fat woman who takes off her girdle. All of a sudden, kaplump, everything starts to descend. This is where we are. And I hope that people, those of us in the middle class, the working class, I hope we can survive this, Marge.
I hope that fat lady sits on them and squats them into them.
Well, do you know how to fire, a 30-30 rifle?
No, but I think I'm going to learn mighty damn fast, I'll tell you. I am so disgusted with what's going on. You know, it started with Enron. It really hit the fan, and it's been going on. And then we had this damn lousy... Oh, by the way, did you see that 5 hours that Frontline did on Bush's war?
No, and what I've heard, it was just a farce and a joke. They didn't get to the point... Frontline did not get to the point of assessing blame where it belonged.
Everything that they said on there, you had talked about. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of new stuff on there. Yeah. You know, they just sort of pointed the fingers, well, this one did this and that one did that. And God, Rumsfeld, I would like to see that whole damn outfit impeached and thrown in jail.
Oh, I would, too. You and about several millions of the rest of us, too, Marge.
I mean, yeah, it's unreal. You know, I'm afraid to ask what's next because somebody's liable to tell me.
I hear you. All right. Well, now that you've got yourself just worked up beyond endurance, we're going to say goodnight and, walk the dog or do something before you take all that to bed with you. Marge, thanks a lot for checking in. I appreciate it. By the way, today is Al Gore's 60th birthday. Happy birthday, Mr. President. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care. Really, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.